This week on the Pop Confidential podcast, we dish the unauthorized Beverly Hills 90210 movie. Did we love it? Did we hate it? Or did we love to hate it? We also talk about Tori Spelling going TMI on Celeb Lie Detector. Blood and Oil, Quantico, Nashville, Scream Queens, all this and more. Keep it popping. We have Luke Kerr. How's it going?
Good. How's it going?
It's great. It's time to get it in. All right, Melody Akles.
Hey, hey.
And we have Sarah Babel.
Hi.
Not a lot of gossip to discuss this week, but I watched something that was almost surreal last night. It was called the unauthorized Beverly Hills 90210 movie on Lifetime. I've already asked Mel, did she watch? And Mel once again reminded me that she's young. And that 90210, when she said, I think when 90210 was really hot, I was like 3. So, yes. So, Sarah, did you catch the movie?
I did not. I saw someone live tweeting it and pointing out that they didn't have Kelly and Brenda wear the identical dress to the prom. And I was like, well, there's just no point to me watching this. They're getting everything wrong.
Well, I will say this. Luke said he didn't watch it either, so I will give a quick recap. So I was all prepared to hate this because, you know, Bobby and Whitney, Aaliyah, you know, Lifetime has not done very well by my childhood in terms of these types of shows. But I had to watch because 90210 was that show for me, like, you know, Happy Days was for my mother's generation. I mean, I had literally a full wall of my bedroom was a life-size 90210 poster. When I brought it home, because, you know, the school, you know how the school has those, like, your schools, high schools would have those bookmobiles and things like that. Well, they also had posters. So I saved up for this poster. I think it was like $40. And when my grandmother came in and saw me huffing and puffing to, you know, use my push pins to tack this post to cover my entire wall, you know, I'm taking down my Brandy and Monica posters. And then all she sees is 8 fresh-faced white people. And she is like, you really want that to cover the whole wall? what about when your anus come visit? You know, she was basically like, do you have to have this all in the house? So, yes, I did. I also had the Trapper Keeper, the board game, everything. That show was my life. So seeing it play out again was surreal in a lot of ways. The actress that they cast is Jenny Garth. Was so spot on with her vocal inflections, the hair, the look. I'm like, did Jenny give away some eggs in college and nobody know about it? Did she donate some eggs to pay for school? Because they need to do a DNA test. That girl was spot on. A lot of it is were things that you knew from the tabloids, like, surprise, Shannen Doherty was a hot mess. But Jason Priestley came off as such a douchebag. Basically, he was, you know, according to the movie, just this cocky little shit. One thing that they got right, in my opinion, is meddlesome network executives. You know, the network execs almost messed this show up at every turn. It was just so like, oh, Sarah, you'll love this. So, when Brenda and Dylan had sex, you know, the first time, and Brenda was all, we did it, you know, and bragging about it at the prom, the advertisers hit the roof. The network wanted them to apologize because you cannot show a teenage girl having sex and enjoying it without consequences.
Oh, I remember that from when I was a kid. I remember that being a huge scandal. So Blossom never did it with Vinny.
Oh, see, I didn't remember that. I do remember when Natalie had sex with Snake on Facts of Life, and that caused some problems. But it's so funny because I remember thinking of 90210 as raunchy and sexy, because that's how it was marketed to me, you know, like this hot new. But of course, in retrospect, you look at it and go, wow, this show is really wholesome. But they got a lot right. They kind of made the Aaron Spelling character a caricature, which I didn't really like. Shannon was just, you know, if Shannon said and did half of the things that they put in this movie, it's a wonder why she ever got hired to do Charmed. I guess it was just like, fool me once. Shame on you, fool me twice.
Because Aaron put the business first, and he knew she was still popular.
Well, he never wanted to get rid of her, too, according to that movie. You know, whatever the network was like, you know, they hate her, and he was like, no, they love to hate her. And but the cast basically did a coup and got rid of her. And, you know, the show ran 6 seasons after that. But it was fun tweeting it because, you know, they made fun of Brian Austin Green. They made him look like he couldn't dance on the show and made his raps weak. And anybody who watched that show knew David Silver could bust a damn move. And so I was tweeting and I was like, you know, why are they acting like Brian didn't have skills or whatever like that? And so Vanessa to the Marcel, who appeared on 90210, tweets me and is like, right, he got all the hot girls. And I said, oh, snap, baby mama checking in to have some, you know, it's good to see that exes get along well. So that was fun. So Vanessa was watching, I guess. Ian Ziering was watching and making funny comments. Jason Priestley was not amused. He was telling people not to watch. It's always one, you know, that's like, don't watch it, don't watch it, don't watch it. And then I'm like, well, you came off pretty bad, so I can kind of see why. But after that, y'all, Tori Spelling, I think that girl will, you know, sell her bowel movement on A&E to make some money. I mean, it's just like, God, dog it, Tori. After the show, she did this thing called Celebrity Lie Detector with this Mary Poppins-type British girl. And so she revealed that, you know, they asked her, did she lose her virginity to anyone on 90210? And she was like, no. So she lost it, you know, to someone else. So then she starts talking about how she wanted to save the dress that she lost her virginity in, because she goes, you know, when you lose your virginity, there's blood. And so, you know, you want to, you know, like, save it. And I'm just like, are you Monica Lewinsky? Is that a thing that girls just never talked about when I was growing up? Is that normal? Y'all, okay, Sarah.
What?
Jamie.
Is that normal? She's at, no, Tori Spelling acted like this was a normal rite of passage for young women to want to save the dress that they lose their virginity in.
I have never heard of such a thing in my life. Also, why are you wearing a dress? You're doing it wrong if you still got your clothes on.
I'm serious. It's like, where was it? In an alley? So the girl, you know, she goes on to admit, you know, that she's, you know, everyone already knew that she and Brian hooked up. So she did. I will say this, she could have a career in daytime with her dramatic pauses, because they did this whole, you know, what other actors on the show did you sleep with? And so she gets all dramatic-y and pausey, and she does this whole setup about how she had this huge crush on Luke Perry and how he took her to her 18th birthday and they kissed. And, you know, so you're thinking, oh, it was Luke. And she goes, but no, I never had sex with Luke Perry. And so she'd already X'd out Ian. So it was like, Jason. And so the woman's all, Jason Priestley. Yes, we had a summer fling. And I'm like, you know, Jason Priestley is somewhere like FML. Why is she on here? And, you know, just as she planned, she's all over the tabloids today. Tori Spelling reveals she slept with Jason Priestley. And you know, Jason's wife is like, really? Really? I have to do carpool this week. And I'm going to have to deal with all this from all of the mobs. Palisades Day School.
I'm so angry. Like, it just, I'm constantly angry at the Spelling children for not taking proper advantage of being Aaron Spelling's children and not continuing his legacy. Like, I would, like, it is my great dream in life that, like, my mom would have called, taken me, you know, into her, you know, sat me down one day and been like, I have something to tell you. While I was at UCLA back in the day, once I wandered onto a Holmby Hills estate and had a night of passion, and Aaron Spelling is actually your daddy, and I could have gone and, like, gone and claimed my piece of the birthright, because they should have kept Spelling Television going. There should be half a dozen scripted programs under that Spelling thing today. Look at what the Bell kids have done. They have all continued their father's legacy. What is wrong with these Spelling kids? Why didn't you want to shadow your dad and learn everything?
To be fair to them, he left them a bag of nickels and a Crown Royal sack in the damn wheel.
Yeah, that's because he was embarrassed by them, because they didn't take over his legacy. They screwed up.
Because of what they become.
That was on them. They had every advantage in life.
But don't you think that's partially parenting?
It could well be. I don't know. I've never been in their house. I'm just saying. So what?
She got the bulk of the estate, sold off the company, sold the house. I'm going to be real. I love my mama to death. I just said this to a reader on Facebook. This reader was like, oh, come on. Why is she complaining? $800,000 is a lot of money. I'm like, $800,000 is a lot of money to me. Yes, it's a lot of money to you. That is poor where they come from.
That is, it is normal when, like, in that situation, to leave the bulk of the estate to the spouse, and then the spouse, when the spouse dies, in theory, is going to leave it to the kids. I mean, but,
I'm going to tell you right now.
But that said, I think he was ashamed of what his kids had become.
I would have chased my mama through the woods singing Rihanna's Bitch Better Have My Money with hound dogs nipping at her heels when she was like, well, no, I'm going to, you know, because that's what, you know, they fell out. You know, she cut Tori off, allegedly. Now, she always says that she has tried to help and blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I would show up with some brass knuckles on, mama. Hi, Tori. Hey, how you doing? You know daddy had the Alzheimer's, so he wasn't in his right mind. You going to go on and cut me a check for more. You going to go on and cut me and come in here, Randy. And I snap my fingers. Come your ass on in here, Randy. You going to go on and cut us both a check for $10 million apiece, at least. We not leaving this mama house. I'm going to roll you down where the daddy's bowling alleys. If you don't come up off some damn money. Because, you know, Candy got remarried. I'd have burned my daddy's house to the ground. You're not going to do me like that. You're not going to just basically disinherit me. Because, come on, estate tax is 50%. So Tori and that boy walked away with $400,000.
Well, but estate tax is, well, I don't know what it was then, but now it's only if it's an estate under 500,000 or 5 million.
Oh, well.
If you only inherit more than 5 million.
They, you know, and, but Sarah could be right. I mean, it could be that Aaron, you know, and now that's in vogue. I mean, Warren Buffett is all planning to leave all of his money to charity, but, you know, Candy got the bulk of that estate. And who's to say when she goes that she's going to leave it to them, because Tori's made many more. I mean, she had only had like one hot mess. I mean, she was pretty.
I thought they made up.
Well, they make up for TV, but the thing of it is, you know, Tori was a tabloid mini sensation around the time Aaron died, but the worst of her stuff has kind of been afterwards. Shannon Doherty, I kind of felt bad for Shannon Doherty, you know, because this was all being rehashed on the heels of it being announced that she has breast cancer. So having the worst time, it kind of, like, you know, it made me think, well, what if somebody was just regurgitating my college years at the worst time of my life? You know, because the woman is in her 40s now, and hopefully there's been the level of growth and maturity that happens with, you know, the natural aging progression. And, you know, so she looks on the internet and sees, well, once again, Shannon Doherty's the super bitch that no one could work with is being bandied about. It did make me say that I want a third 90210. And this time I want it to be about them. And, you know, I want it to be about them and their kids and what they're doing today in Beverly Hills. You know, as many of them as they can gather up. It's like, you know, forget trying to do another high school show. I want it to be like Knott's Landing with them. You know, but anyway, let's talk about the soaps we actually do have in prime time. Blood and Oil, we did not get to talk about it on...
We were recording last week when it
aired. Yes, so let's talk about Blood and Oil. Melody, have you seen it?
Yes.
Okay.
I did. I watched it.
So what do you think about it?
I think it's okay. Everybody always wants to compare it to Dallas because of the oil business and everything. And I feel like it's not a Dallas. It has Dallas qualities, but it is not Dallas. I'm not a super big fan of the main couple, Chase Crawford and whatever her name is. But I like the side characters. Like, I like, what's that man's name? Don Johnson. I like his character. And that girl from Revenge. I think they have kind of an interesting relationship. And I like the oil business aspect of it. I don't like that. I guess that's his son that was, like, the jerk in all of it that knocked down the oil rig. I wasn't a big fan of his. But I feel like it has potential. I just don't want it. I don't want it to get really slow, which I feel like is what could happen to that show, is that it could get too wrapped up in side business rather than what it's really about.
Now, Sarah, I read the pilot script very early on. A friend of mine hooked me up with it, and it didn't feel like Dallas at all. It really felt like a specific kind of slice of life type drama about the oil boom in the Bakken. And obviously, ABC, since they have such, you know, good luck with women 18 to 49 with more soapy fare, you know, in its later iterations became much more akin to Dallas. And then by the very end, they were even using Empire in the promos. Two women are trying to build an empire. And when I saw that promo, I'm not going to lie, I'm like, no, that's so not. That little girl is just trying to, she came there to get a laundromat going.
Yeah. She's trying to make it.
What do you think of it, Sarah?
Yeah, I mean, I felt like my thought was it's centered around the wrong characters. You made the most boring characters on the show the protagonist. And I see why, because you're like, oh, this is their introduction to the world. They're the newcomers. This world is so crazy. And I'm like, but it wasn't crazy enough, like, in a lot of ways. Because I just read an article about how complaining that just talked about how during the gold rush in San Francisco in like 1849, like in 1849 dollars, people were paying like $10,000 a month for a hotel room and all this stuff. And it, like, this is the equivalent of that now. And it didn't necessarily convey like the weirdness of that world. And also, I think the laundromat thing just made them look goofy as opposed to like if they just came out there to make their fortune in the oil business or something. But you know, I was into, like, Don Johnson's character, not surprisingly, and their family, and I was like, you know, it was just a pilot. If we can just center it around them some more, then I'm a lot more invested in it. Because they're the soapy people as opposed to, you know, the couple that his big dream was to start a laundromat. So,
Luke, what did you think of it?
Well, ignoring the fact that North Dakota doesn't have mountain ranges, the Bakken is flat for the most part. Not entirely, but there are no mountain ranges like that in North Dakota, for those who might be wondering.
Luke, they should have hired you to be the North Dakota expert for the show.
Well, apparently they film it in Utah, so it is what it is.
Dallas is not an oil town. FYI, everyone, Houston is the oil town in Texas. No one cares about that type of stuff when the show is hot. David Jacobs gave an interview saying he had never even been to Dallas, Texas, when he created the most successful primetime soap of all time. So continue on about how the mountains...
But at least it's a little bit logical.
The mountains will take the show.
No, but I'm saying, at least in Dallas, you don't have... if they say that they're drilling oil out in the back nine or whatever it is, it's...
Banking town. The oil is in Corpus Christi and Houston. When, you know, it is totally unrealistic that some farm in Northeast Texas had that much oil up under it. David Jacobs and Michael Fillerman make jokes about that on the TV Legends interviews. So,
well, my summary was for Blood and Oil. I did like Chase Crawford. I did like Don Johnson, but when I was finished watching, I tweeted that Blood and Oil is a primetime soap with the potential of oil rights, but a pilot as shallow as a dry well.
Okay. Now, I'm going to address this specifically to our core readers and listeners who are so upset about the Dallas thing. And should I watch this because I'm still mad about TNT canceling Dallas? That it's apples and apricots. It has nothing to do.
Yeah.
So the poor guy who wrote, you know, Josh Pate and Rhodes Fishburne, it's not their fault that TNT, you know, couldn't monetize the new Dallas for more than three seasons. So if you're, that's just saying you're not going to watch a, I mean, it's no, every black sitcom that came after The Cosby Show was a ripoff of The Cosby Show. I was still able to enjoy Family Matters. I mean, it doesn't matter. Dynasty was a ripoff of Dallas, and it was a totally different show. Sure, they're similar. And if you want to be real, Dallas was a ripoff of the movie Giant with Liz Taylor Dim in it. I mean, there's always something that inspired something, you know.
And they've got the Not Dallas hashtag.
Every soap opera in the world owes their, pretty much owes their early stories to those women's movie tearjerkers. I mean, Agnes Nixon, queen of soaps, who created All My Children, totally ripped Imitation of Life for What Life to Live's first big story. People always pay homage. I don't understand why that creates so much rage. I mean, Lee Daniels, not only did he say it all of last year that Empire is inspired by Dynasty, the man said in a recent interview that he is rewatching old episodes of Dynasty for inspiration, which makes me kind of wonder, how soon is Esther Shapiro? You better quit saying that too much, because I'm like, okay, now, you don't want Esther calling you up like, oh, so you like Dynasty, do you? Residuals. But I don't get the whole anger at the show about it being similar to Dallas. It's like, Dallas is one of my all-time favorite shows, but I don't think that no one can. I would be thrilled if somebody did a new show about a vineyard, you know. I would be thrilled if somebody did another show. I mean, come on. Desperate Housewives was a comedic reboot of Knott's Landing. It happens. TV executives always want something that is very similar to what's been done before with a new twist. And I feel like, if anything, this is more like that Dallas prequel movie where we learned how Jock and Ellie and Digger's love triangle juxtaposed with, you know, the Section 40 discovery and all that stuff. Because to me, Chase Crawford and his wife are more, you know, they're young wildcatters. We never really saw on the real Dallas, you know, except for that movie. We heard about the wildcatter days with Jock, but the Ewings were old money by the time the show, you know, in terms of the story of Dallas, we never really saw a bunch of wildcatting at the beginning of Dallas. So I don't really get that, you know, there are two soap operas about oil. So what? Who cares? I do feel it was a little tepid. I would have cast some characters a little differently. And the central Cain and Abel story of, I wish you were more like my boy, or my boy was more like you. I don't really know if either of those actors are strong enough to make me care about that particular arc, unless they have the son, you know, fall for Chase Crawford's character's, Billy LaFever's wife, because, you know, that's always a good soapy conceit if, you know, the, you know, pharmacy tech wife falls in love with him or something, and then you have a triangle between them. I know they're introducing this new arc tonight with the daughter, Don Johnson's character, who, Lord, let me look. I have to. That's how you can tell. Like, when Empire came out, we had no problems knowing who all the people's names were immediately. So that's, you can tell it's kind of lackluster. But Hap Briggs, so his daughter's character is coming, you know, the daughter is coming on, and she's an environmentalist and wants to stop her father from, you know, drill baby drill. So it's basically like, what if Sarah Palin, what if, you know, that little Bristol instead of getting pregnant all the time? What if she was trying to stop Drill Baby Drill? So that could be interesting, you know, if she's like, you know, Pam or, you know, Ellie in Dallas. You know, Ellie didn't believe in drilling, you know. So it could be interesting. But, yeah, I really think they're going to have one of those Melrose Place come to Jesus moments where they look around and say, okay, what's Heather Locklear doing? You know, can we get her in here as, you know, the wife's sister and have her start sleeping with everybody to fix this show? Another ABC show that just kind of won't go there is Nashville. We'll talk about that a little later because I do want to talk about first hit up another new show that people have wanted us to discuss, which is Quantico. The very Grey's Anatomy meets Homeland FBI soap. Sarah, what did you think of Quantico, which is, it's now doing its second episode, I think, as we're taping too.
I actually, it was entertaining. Like, it was exactly, it was unabashedly using the Shonda Rhimes formula, and it for the whole, on the whole, worked. Although, like, I was kind of like, really? The FBI would assign people to dig up the dirt on each other? That just seems like a recipe for disaster, which it turned out to be. But, Priyanka, she really was worth all the hype. I thought she did a great job as the lead. They did a good job, you know, they did the typical thing, or they're, like, playing with time, like How to Get Away with Murder did, and to me, I was like, basically, it was unabashed. They're like, here are all the hot, really, really good-looking FBI trainees, and each one of them has a secret. And here, you know, they straight up did the Mayor Dare with the lead woman and her and one of the other guys, and except she like busted it by being like, "We totally had sex yesterday," to everyone out there. It was good popcorn television. It did not changed the world for me, but it definitely, I was like, it delivered what I thought it would deliver from its promos, and it has promise.
Mel, what did you think about it?
I didn't get around to watching that one. I wanted to, but I didn't get around to it, so I promise I'll watch it by the next podcast.
Okay, Luke?
I loved it. I thought it was lots of fun. It was totally Grey's Anatomy set at the FBI, but you know what? I'm okay with that. Great. I enjoyed Grey's Anatomy. This is the first one that I could really like, the first show since Grey's Anatomy premiered, where you can see that it's a obvious clone. I mean, obviously, there's some that you can obviously see they're clones as well, but this is the one that first successfully did it as like it, on their own premise, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was going and looking at, I had to look it up because the one of the FBI agents, the blonde guy who can't do pull-ups, I was like, boy, he looks familiar. But I couldn't place him, and then I looked on IMDb, and here he was on The Flash as Eddie Thawne, and I was like, damn, The Flash made him look old. He looks so young on Quantico. But I like the idea of the mystery. I like the fact that she's being framed. I like the fact that we could have her on the run and that she's going to be on the run. It's sort of like Alias meets Grey's Anatomy, and I'm totally okay with that.
All right. Well, I have yet to watch Quantico. I did watch the first 8 minutes. God, I hate technology. So, like, I was getting ready for bed the other night, and I always watch stuff before bed. And ABC now makes you verify your cable thing, which I, you know, of course I have cable, but I don't know how to do that. And I was like, oh, God. And I was like, I really thought I was going to be able to watch it in bed. So I just, they had the 8 minutes for free. So I watched that. I watched her.
Well, watch it on Hulu.
Well, I have it. No, I can watch it downstairs, but I just want no. Oh, well, I guess. Oh, what you mean? And I can watch it in my bed in Hulu. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
I'll watch it tonight. But I did see her.
Jamie needs one of the many things that you can get to watch Hulu on your TV set.
He has tablets.
I have several tablets, and you know, I just get tired of that. It's like, verify what? What do you need to verify? Verify this. So anyway,
you just need a web-enabled TV.
Oh God!
Or just get like
Amazing.
Amazon Fire TV, Google Chromecast, Apple TV, Roku, any one of those.
Well, I have.
I watched it on my PS3. So.
I have, yeah, I have a lot of that junk. I just don't use it. so I need to watch it. Nashville came back. And Nashville, for me, is that show I just can't quit, but I really want to because, I mean, it's so...
It's literally a country song.
Yeah. I can't quit it either. Don't feel bad.
I mean, Juliet has the postpartum, and yet she's able to party, and so we get Jonathan Jackson crying and holding a baby carriage, and yeah. And Tammy Wynette sings, what is everybody thinking about Nashville this season so far? We will go with you first, Mel.
I think it's starting off kind of slow. The big cliffhanger from last season was good. With you didn't know if it was going to be Deacon or his sister that died, and I really wanted it to be his sister. And I got my wish in this episode because I couldn't stand her. But, we're a little slow. I'm loving Deacon and Raina together because I've been wanting that for a long time now, so I'm finally getting it. They have a side story going on with the two girls and the daddy, Teddy, who is now in jail for all that shade and dirt he did from last season. And the oldest girl is kind of like, I don't really care. And the youngest girl is like, he's our dad, but we have to love him still. But she's still kind of on the fence about it. That's an okay side story. Then you've got the story with Will, who he's gay and he's still not really okay with it, and then Luke just dropped him from the record label, so now he has nowhere to be. He's kind of lost in the shuffle, which is kind of always his story. So that's okay. And then they got that crazy girl that was married to Will. I don't really pay attention to her too much, so it's just kind of it's floating along for me. Nashville, there's the Juliet story, but Juliet is always so over the top and screaming, crying tears, but I'm not okay, but I'm okay. And it's getting old. It really is. I'm going to stick it out because I've been watching it this long. So,
Sarah, have you tuned in for this season of Nashville?
I have. And it's just like, I have the same relationship with you do that you do. Like, it will never play the things it sets up. It, like, won't go full soap. It's, like, it doesn't want to admit it's a soap. And the thing is, for me, the reason I keep watching is Juliet and Avery and Hayden Panettiere and Jonathan Jackson's performances. I feel like they're the only people who know what show they're on. They understand that you put in as much emotion as possible when you're in a show like this, where I feel like everyone else is throwing it away and underplaying it. Yep, that's the two best child actors in the soaps ever. It's perfect to me. I was so mad they didn't name the kid Liz because it would have been a shout out to both of their characters.
No, right?
But nobody thought of it. So, especially because Cadence, that is the worst name ever for a baby. No wonder Julia is suppressed. But,
I love that name. I'm Southern though.
Yeah. So yeah, that's true. I'm not. So, but it was it just is like one of those things where I'm like, it's always like 56% of the way to where I want it to be, and then it can never just get the rest of the way there. And I feel like they're, you know, they Raina and Deacon, they like never let Raina make any mistakes, even though she's like terrible at running her record label. And it's just like awful. The Raina-Juliet relationship, it should have been, frankly, you know, that should have been their version of, like, Crystal versus Alexis in a different, you know, more contemporary, more sophisticated way. But they lost the courage to really make it about their rivalries, to really make it about old country versus new country. And, you know, Juliet was supposed to be Taylor Swift in season one, and then they changed all that. And it was just like, you know, I feel just like they've never quite figured out what the show is. So they've got good characters. And also, God, I hate Scarlett.
Aw, y'all be hating on Scarlett.
I like Scarlett. I don't mind. But I haven't watched Nashville since the second. But it was like, I like Scarlett in the first season.
Well, for me, this is a show. It could be just as hot as Empire if done correctly. And it, you know, even though it's, what, four seasons in, it's not too late because they've never done it. Nashville is a hotbed. Just like Lee Daniels and Danny Strong took the real life, you know, raunchy, wild stories of Diddy and Jay-Z and fictionalized them, they could be doing that with this show, but they get so bogged down. I don't care. If I never hear the name Highway 54, whatever it's called, again.
65.
I don't care about Raina's stupid company. I want the story of why Garth Brooks left his wife for what's her face?
Trisha Yearwood.
I want the story of Artem McGraw and Kenny Chesney more than just BFFs. I mean, they've done a little bit of that with what's his name on the show, the boy from the OC. But it's all just about, can he keep a record deal? I want to see him screwing another big Nashville hunk. And, you know, I just feel like they try to be
so... Jamie, you need to write this in a post.
...earnest with that show. And a lot of that, you know, if you've read through the drama, you know, is that Connie Britton allegedly doesn't want it to be a straight-up soap. But, I mean, and the thing of it is, what is it in season four? So they could... I mean, they pretty much could... She's probably just like, look, let's just wrap it up. But my thing is, ABC could go ahead and, you know, get rid of Raina and then make it a real soap. You know, make Juliet Miranda Lambert instead of, you know, Taylor Swift. And let it just be real, full-on. Country music has some of the best real-life sagas, you know, in the world, you know, and I don't know. I hope that they just write Teddy off, because this whole, he's never been necessary to me.
Agreed.
Which is political stories and the hookers, and they just really have to just go get a, really just go get a copy of Star Magazine and flip to any story about Reba McEntire and her husband just busted up. You know that's a soap opera.
Well, and what's the guy on The Voice who just broke
what's
up?
Miranda's husband, Toby. No, his name ain't Toby. What's that man name? He ain't Toby. Keith.
Keith.
No, Blake, it's Blake Shelton.
Blake. You know. There we go.
Look at
country.
Scandal. Scandal proves that you don't even have to be contemporary. Scandal just ripped off Princess Di's death, and that happened 15 years ago. You know, they could do the Dixie Chicks, which they did kind of when Juliet...
I would love that.
Yeah, they kind of did it with Juliet, you know, when she said something anti-Christian or something, and, you know, they had her lose her career. So they kind of did that. But there have been so many good country music scandals that they could just, in theory, keep this show going 10 years. And you know, but I want to love you, I want to love you, Nashville, but you got to do right by me. Because the world ain't going to stop if you get canceled for my broken heart. Let's talk about Scream Queens. I'm behind, so I guess I'll just have to deal with being spoiled. Luke, take us into last week.
Did anybody else end up watching? Because you guys said you were going to
watch it. I tried. I watched, like, the first, like,
I watched one,
and I was so irritated by it that I just had to turn it off.
So what were you irritated by?
I watched the pilot.
It was just so, like, I'd seen it so many times before. It was the most obvious kind of dated cliches about sorority girls. I'm just like, Ryan Murphy, can you stop writing these, like, just get some new characters, you know? I just felt like I'd seen this tropes so many times before, and they weren't fresh, and it just kind of put me off. So
Mel,
I watched it and I thought it was awful, and I don't understand how y'all like it, because I tried real hard, and I just, first of all, I don't think Emma Roberts is a strong enough actress. Yep, I said it. I sure did. I don't think she's a strong enough actress to run this show. I'm sorry. I just don't. I'm like, okay, why? I don't know. You got all these little girls, and they're running around, and kind of like Sarah said, it's a lot of the same stuff I'd already seen. And you know the little devil character they had every time he showed up. Oh, something crazy going to happen. Oh, the girl, Death Taylor Swift, got her head cut off by the... And I'm just like, so stupid. This is dumb. I couldn't watch it. I did like Jamie Lee Curtis' character and Niecy Nash and what's that other girl name?
You did not think that girl going, what's happening? What's happening?
So stupid. gonna be the one that to die because she was like, I don't know what's going on because if you speak up, I'm like, really? I'm losing.
But then when she saw that damn, when she saw that lime ball coming for her head, she knew what was up there.
I tried.
Luke, what did you think about the second episode? No spoilers, but what did you think?
I enjoyed it. I'm still having lots of fun with it. I feel like the way Sarah was like, it's so serious with all the tropes. For me, this isn't about being serious. Like, I'm not treating this like I treat General Hospital or any of the other ones. I'm just treating this like grade A fun popcorn. Let's see how many people die. I don't care if there's cliches because it's just a guilty pleasure type show. And that's what I'm enjoying.
I think he's purposefully playing all those tropes.
Exactly. I think they're doing it intentionally, but I'm still enjoying it.
Yeah,
I had a lot
but it just always seems like even parodying it and making fun of it is dated at this point for these things. Like, I feel like I saw it popular, it was really fresh, and like Glee, the first season of Glee, yeah. And I'm just like, I'm tired. Like, it's the same thing again and again, and now it's just...
How is this... I mean, other than the fact that it's young people, how is a slasher thing, like, popular or Glee?
I mean, it's the same writing style, the same campiness, the same things. So, like, this is the exact same show as the show Harbor Island that CBS did, like, for the summer a couple of seasons ago, where, like, someone died every week, and it got, like, no buzz, and nobody remembers it.
The only thing that Ryan Murphy's ever written that I've seen, at least on television, that hasn't been campy in some way, shape, or form, was The New Normal.
It was hella campy.
I mean, Nip Tuck was campy, popular
yeah,
campy.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same.
Nip Tuck didn't get campy until, like, season 3, though.
Yeah, and it doesn't even about her camp. I just like this particular thing of, like, let's make fun of bitchy sorority girls. I just feel like, forget even Ryan Murphy, just in general, I've seen it done to death.
See, and I can understand where you're coming from. I luckily did not, I never got into Glee, and I didn't like Popular. So if he's been doing, since, you know, Luke did watch both of those shows and still loves it. So maybe I'm just blessed that all I ever watched from him religiously was Nip Tuck. And I do see that same biting, you know, pop culture, you know, satire thing going. But
this, for me, what was my breaking point, I've mentioned this on podcasts before, but with Nip Tuck, I stopped watching when they killed that person with the teddy bear
that,
stuffing.
You know,
but for me, that teddy bear stuffing, which was done so seriously and intentionally, if it had been done for laughs like Scream Queen is, I probably would have enjoyed it. And so maybe that's why I'm having fun with Scream Queens, is just because it's all being done for a laugh, whereas on Nip Tuck it was serious intent.
Yeah, well, we don't all have to like the same shows. That's the beauty of the podcast. So I am behind, so I will tune in this week. I know someone has already warned me that Niecy Nash is yet again in fine form, because she made
me really great in it.
Wet my pants. Mel, I will say, I wished Kiki Palmer's character, that was my only big gripe, is since they already have Niecy being, you know, kind of a typical sister friend girl, I wish that Kiki could have been a little more preppy, because I do feel like those are two very, very broad, over-the-top black female stereotypes. So I wish Kiki was playing more like the black girl in How to Get Away with Murder, as opposed to being another, you know, little Nene. But, you know, gay white men love their Nenes. They love that Nene stereotype. Ryan Murphy loves him some Nene. Anderson Cooper loves him some Nene. I want, you know, some balance. If you got one acting like Nene, I need one with a PhD. Okay, let's get into TGIT, since we already mentioned it. We'll start with How to Get Away with Murder, because that's the hot show right now. So, Annalise is, you know, walk on the lesbian side is not just Roseanne kissing Mario Hemingway that one time. They are going there. And this week, we got a full-on love scene. Mel, what are you thinking about that and all things How to Get Away with Murder?
Honey, Annalise and Favka's character, they was getting it in. I can't necessarily say I wasn't mad because they have a good chemistry. And hey, if Annalise likes it, I love it. So I was here for that. Now, story-wise, Lord, there's so much that happens in this show, it's kind of hard to keep up. Let's see, from what I can remember, I always like to go to the end because that's the exciting part is, let's see. I remember Annalise was on the stand and she was basically destroying that girl that was prosecuting her, but you know, the tables ended up getting turned on her. And then flash forward in the story a little bit more, Fomka's character ends up getting Annalise's little side piece she had from the first season off for the murder. So that was interesting. And then what happened with the new case?
Well,
there's another murder that someone's gonna get away with.
Flash forward, yeah. You know, it looks like it's the DA.
Hey, yeah.
Right, that was dead on the floor at the end, right?
Yeah.
And then we see Annalise is bleeding out too.
Yeah.
Okay.
And all the kids are running.
Once again, Luke, what did you think of the very awkward yet endearing stuff with Connor? Silly ass Asher basically tells Connor's boyfriend Oliver that they all know that he is HIV positive and starts being all, you know, helpful. And then Oliver,
well, doesn't there have to always be one of those in the group? I get that it can be a little bit cringeworthy, but at the same time, it's nice that they have that person in the group, just because if they didn't, it might be too serious. They need something awkward to just pull out a little bit of humor once in a while. When he's with Bonnie and he's making his stupid jokes and she's sort of rolling her eyes at him but still attracted to him, it helps diffuse the fact that Bonnie is going up against Annalise. And I can see where it's annoying, but I think that it's an important part of the dynamic for all the people.
Sarah,
and that's very realistic. Like, there's a lot of law school bros who are exactly like him. Like, if you go on the internet, everyone's like, oh God, he's one of those lacrosse bros and stuff. I mean, he just seems like the most, like half of law school is Asher. So it sort of just seems to need to be there in that. And it's kind of like what we said about there being good for there to be one not politically correct person. It's good to have him for that.
The best thing that I thought about that episode wasn't Annalise and her old college friend. It was Frank and Laurel.
Oh God, that was the scene.
That was the hottest scene of the episode.
Oh man, that was hot.
Down, it was like, fuck, that's hot.
It was hot, but I don't know a straight man in America who's ever going to do that.
I love that someone on Twitter pointed out that Frank just asked Laurel to earn him.
I know. It's like, really? What?
No, but, you know, it's... I mean, of all the things...
Frank is sexy, though.
He is. And, I mean, here's the deal. In that, who's to say Laurel's the only one for him right now? In that sense, he may just be, like, tired of this little girl. You know? I mean, at that moment, I'm, you know...
Well, Michaela's about to get some loving, but it might lead to some cutting of her throat with eggs 911.
She has the worst taste in men. She really does.
This girl.
But isn't there always one of those?
Well, anyway, the overarching murder mystery with the, I'm convinced, incestuous adopted siblings. What are your thoughts on how that progressed, Sarah?
I mean, they definitely have that vibe. The fact that they cast, you know, the actors of the different races to really just play up these are not people who are biologically related seems to be a setup for that. I mean, they just seem creepy as hell. Like, it's like they kind of put up some spin on, like, the Menendez brothers or something with these characters. I'm really curious to see how it all leads to, you know, what I'm right now picturing as some crazy, like, shootout duel between Annalise and the DA that kills one and leaves the other bleeding, even though I know that's not at all what's going to happen. I mean, they seem creepy, they seem weird, and I'm like, and yet, like, everyone's, you know, they they don't seem to feel appropriately concerned or remorseful like you would, or, you know, devastated like you would be if you were innocent and in that situation. Then they just also don't seem to be, like, concerned that they may end up on death row. So I'm definitely wondering to go there, and I'm kind of, you know, and Wes was getting it in with the sister, wasn't he? Or
He did. Well, they basically had him play the puppy again.
They played a puppy, yeah, with her. So we'll see where that goes. Especially because he still has that weird chemistry with Annalise. So
yeah, he does. Now, I will say, it's so funny. Last TV season, I was getting calls from my family every night after Empire, and then every Thursday night after the TGIT shows, and getting the rehashes with my aunts. And, you know, to be fair, to go ahead and say this, they are not in, neither one are any longer in the demographic that is most desirable, but I always like it to be able to get, you know, a thought of what middle America is really thinking. And, you know, they're not on blogs, they're not. So last year, every week it was, you know, oh my God. You know, I can't say everything because a lot of the stuff they say is not politically correct, and I spend half of my conversations going, you can't say that. That's rude. You can't. But I will say that, like, and even, like, you know, other friends who aren't like us plugged into the TV blogosphere, I am noticing a lot of older black women not as happy with How to Get Away with Murder and Empire, and a lot of it has to do with the gay and lesbian stuff. And I am very fervent in my, you know, my go-to defense when I get that. Well, you know, I'm okay with all the gay stuff, but dang, do it have to be that much? And I'm like, you've watched soap operas since the beginning of time, and you never said, dang, does it have to be all that heterosexual sex in an episode? So that annoys me.
So what do you think of the Power or 50 Cent thing?
What about it?
Well, because he just came out and was saying that the reason why Empire's ratings dropped was because there was too much gay stuff.
Oh, well, see, perfect tie-in, because I didn't know that, but I do think that, you know, unfortunately, there are some in the black community, and, you know, I'm not a Lee Daniels type that thinks that blacks are more homophobic than whites. I think that conservatives from the South on either side of the spectrum are going to be, you know, very, you know, conservative. You know, black people, you know, many black liberals are conservative when it comes to sex. And, you know, it's kind of annoying me because I feel like I'm having to defend the shows, and I'm like, hell, I don't write them. But, you know, with Empire, I feel like a lot of that was for shock and awe. I think How to Get Away with Murder is just being very brave and bold and shocking us, yes, by letting us know that Annalise is not only flawed, a little bit lecherous, well, not more than a little bit lecherous, but she's also bisexual. And I don't know why her being bisexual should be what makes people go, oh my God, this is too much. I'm like, she and her law firm are covering up one murder after another, but the fact that she likes to eat kitty is the deal breaker? I don't get that.
Also, to me, it shows her general bad taste. She left Famke Janssen for Sam.
Yeah.
Come on now.
I bet that
so was... in case you hadn't read it, the quote from 50 Cent was, there are 3 million less viewers who tuned into last night's episode. Did you watch? We could not take the extra gay stuff or celebrity stuff last night.
I don't even think it was any gayer. It was more celebrity stuff.
50 Cent is such a hater about this show that it is beyond ridiculous. I liked the first season of Power to an extent. I haven't really watched a lot.
I tried watching Power and I was like, ugh.
It is the typical Stars show. It reminds me, my old roommate forced me to watch that Spartacus. And it is
Spartacus.
That was a Clueless reference. Everyone who knows me knows why I call it Spartacus. Shout out to Alicia Silverstone and Sharon Clueless. So, anyway.
For the record, Stars has good shows.
Stars has what would have been syndicated shows back in the day, like Xena Warrior Princess, but they actually show boobs and ass.
Well, but how do you account
Outlander.
For Outlander?
I've tried without.
I mean, Outlander's fantastic.
I tried. It's okay. It's okay. Just for me, Stars is very Cinemax-y, in my opinion. I haven't really seen. I like Survivor's Remorse, but Stars is never going to give. Well, I'm not going to say never, but right now they are not in any danger. HBO is not shook by Stars, is all I'm saying. And Power feels like it would have been a syndicated 90s soap opera that came on late at night with Xena, in a block with Xena Warrior Princess and that show about that band from Canada and then show Mutant X and all of them. I mean, that's what I think of. That I mean, it's okay, but Naturi Naughton is no Taraji P. Henson. If it needs to let go and let God, because it just reeks of haterism at this point. But yeah, my aunt, I'm not going to lie, after that episode, she calls me, Jamie, why? They have to have that man all up on that piano like that. And I'm just like, oh, God. Because it's like, why? It's like, just like when a black dude robs a liquor store, I don't want to feel like I have to be defending every black person in America who does something bad. And, you know, not that this was something bad. It was just very overtly homosexual. And the thing of it is, there's all, you know, it's to be frank and to have a frank discussion about this, even within the gay community, there are factions who are not as comfortable. And they played that out on the show in the storyline. Jamal is not as comfortable with Miss Lawrence as his man is. So, in a way, Lee is a genius because I applaud him for going, I don't care if you are uncomfortable. We're not going to just show you preppy, homogenized, fresh-faced, you know, versions of gay life where you go, oh, okay. Because it's easy for America to fall in love with a Jamal or a Connor because they're cute. And, you know, women are going to go, damn, I just wish I could turn him. So you can kind of, you know, gingerly fall in love with him. Just like Kevin and the other one-on brothers and sisters. You know, they look just like straight boys, except they suck cock. But then you put Miss Lawrence on there, and it's like, in your face, kaboom, honey. We are here. We are queer. We are on your piano, and you're going to get used to it. And then with How to Get Away with Murder, it's like, no, we're not going to just do, you know, the Arizona and Cali kind of having a fun, really sped up sex scene. Because, you know, if you ever look at their sex scenes on Grey's, they've had some hot sex scenes, but there's always that comedic beat to it, you know, that like they're kind of like making it like zany. But with that shit with Famke and Viola, that was some, what's her name? Sharon Stone, grinding, thrusting, kitty cat eating, super sex. And yeah, I sit and go, I wonder how this is playing in Texas. Because when I was a kid growing up in Texas and the Bible Belt and stuff, that would get your show taken off of that affiliate, you know. I remember when they took MTV off the air, you know, in my college town. We're talking in 1999. They took MTV off the entire cable station because of the gays on The Real World and Beavis and Butthead. So TV has really changed a lot. But no, I personally don't think 50 Cent is just hating. It's like, create a network hip-hop show if you want to. Calm down. It's like everybody says, you know, 50 Cent has beef with the show. It's like, I think they borrowed from every... I mean, well, Daddy Strong does say in interviews that he was hearing a story about 50 Cent when he got the idea. So I guess, not 50 Cent, Puff Daddy. He was hearing a story on the radio about Puff Daddy. And Mel, you know, we haven't talked about Empire a lot, because you can hit me with this. So they keep on acting like all these rappers should be upset. Up until this season, I thought Lucius Lyons was an R&B singer, because You're So Beautiful is not the typical Pac, and Biggie wasn't singing those songs called You're So Beautiful. So, but now they're trying to make him more of a rapper. What would you classify as Lucius's, since he did that rap this past week? What would you classify as?
More, I thought he was a rapper. Like, I thought he was more like hip hop R&B kind of thing, like a mix, like a good mesh. I never thought he was like one or the other because of the You Are So Beautifuls and, you know, all those other songs from the first season. I always thought he was kind of just a mix. Like, sometimes he might, you know, sing a little bit on the track, but he might rap most of the time. You know what I mean?
So would that be like a street Usher then?
Okay.
Well, I was thinking more LL Cool J because LL, okay, you know,
yeah,
had,
I got that,
very poppy rhymes, but then he also had I Need Love and would do those, like that song, yes, with J-Lo. But they always try to act like he's some Jay-Z or 50, and, you know, they don't sing You're So Beautiful. They don't sing love songs. And let's get back to the story, though. So this week on Empire, we pick up on the thwarted, after the thwarted corporate takeover attempt, and Cookie is getting ready to start Lion Dynasty out of the really gross studios where they all frequented last year when they were trying to get Jamal's record off the ground. Hakeem played a game of ping pong back and forth between the two factions of the Lion family. Cookie banished Boo Boo Kitty, and Lucius tangled with Ludacris. Sarah, what did you think about Empire this week?
I thought it was better than the premiere, because the premiere, my issue of it was, like, the celebrity stuff seemed really tacked in. This time we got into the story, and the story is going to be, for the season, Cookie is starting her own company to rival Lucius, which to me, that is a storyline with a lot of potential. You know, you have these, that makes sense, you know. So to me, that part, that worked better for me, and like the celebrity cameos were tuned down. Yeah, Ludacris is in there, but whatever. He was just playing a prison guard. That's fine. What cracked me up though was the way they just put together that whole like recording session in the prison with all of these with all of this like great equipment. And what really cracked me up with is the one white guy that was in Lucius's prison posse that apparently is involved, like, in some way with the production of music. So I was just like, well, what's his story? Because everything I have learned about prison, which comes entirely from TV and the movies, is that it is completely racist and racially segregated and everybody hates each other. So I was curious about what that was going on.
Yeah, I always, you know, that from the whole Oz world, and even, like, my, you know, I have a cousin who's a prison guard. Like, even if you are the most... Oh. Racial.
And even Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, you have to segregate off into races. But, you know, I mean, there are always, I mean, I feel like, you know, if Robin Thicke ever goes to jail, you know he's going to be trying to hang with the He's just not going to help himself. It's just going to tear his heart apart.
It's a possibility. He could end up in jail. But I like that storyline. I still think like they put stuff too fast, like in terms of like Jamal taking over and all of this, and I wonder if like they took away what people liked about Jamal in order to create this turn in his character. But I liked, you know, I liked it. I liked Hakeem like leaking his own album and not even like paying attention to the legalities of it, and you know, I was very interested, and Andre, I thought, had a great scene when he was asking his father why he's the one who just, you know, never gets cut any slack. So
one thing that I, you know, find a little, and of course, it's a soap opera, so it's not going to be totally realistic, but, you know, you look at this, and, you know, you think about, you know, L.A. Reid's children, you know, who basically are famous for wanting to beat up Chili after the TLC movie came out. And it's like, okay, if L.A. Reid goes to prison, you know, the board of directors at his empire are not just going to be okay with L.A. Reid and Pebble's kids. I kind of wish that they had that activist board member. You know, to me, if they would have kept Andre involved and, you know, made him more of this rabble-rouser who was always trying to undo his brother from the inside, it would be more... Because I'm going to be honest, whenever someone wants to start a rival company to rival, you know, some massive conglomerate, I just kind of roll my eyes because it'll take Cookie 20 years to make Black Dynasty what Empire is. So I kind of would like to see the fight stay on Empire. I mean, I really would like for it to continue with all of the Lions fighting, you know, for their piece of the pie. Hell, I would rather see Cookie, you know, she knows that she has Lucius's heart. I would rather see her try to marry his ass and then, you know, be denying him his medication so that she could basically get him declared medically incompetent and take control of the company that way. And then be like, you know, looking over his bed, you know, in a very Alexis Carrington way, like with Cecil when she got Colby Co. You know, I mean, I don't know. I feel like I enjoyed this week too, but I do feel like they're spinning in a lot of different directions, like Hakeem with the girl group. And I don't want them to get into the same trouble Nashville is in, which is being all over the place instead of focusing on the central conceit. Luke, what did you think about this week's Empire?
Cookie needs to change her wardrobe. I don't know why, but Cookie's fashion this season so far has not been very good. I don't mind her, like, the Lion Dynasty. It is a little bit of a joke that they would be on par with one another. But I do like the fighting aspect. Sarah mentioned it earlier about Jamal's changing too much of Jamal. And I sort of feel that way. I feel like the first season was all about Jamal being the underdog, and he just got it. He became the top dog way too fast. I feel like the story about the rivalry between the three brothers, which was a great conceit in the first season, should have still played out longer into this season, especially since the first one was shorter. I'm having a little bit of hard time enjoying Jamal just because of the fact that he's been changed so much. I still like the character. I still think he's a fantastic singer, but I'm having a little bit of trouble with that. Hakeem is fun. I get why they're doing the girl group thing, and I like, and I actually tweeted, like, boy, I'm actually proud of Hakeem this last week. He's starting to grow up a little, but I'm enjoying it overall. It's just there's a few things that bother me.
Well, let's jump back to TGIT for a bit. You know, I always like to do How to Get Away with Murder opposite Empire, because they were the two big shows of last year, so comparing and contrasting is kind of fun. But let's go to the Elder Stateswomen. We'll go with Scandal first. Mel, so your girl pulled the ultimate hoe move at the end of Scandal. It's like Liv and Fitz, and y'all know I am a Liv and Jake fan, but I had to give props when I was watching. Liv and Fitz are such a super couple. I mean, they are a textbook. You know, after all the starts and stops, we keep coming back to these two hearts. It's like they're always at cross purposes. If you watch daytime soaps, you always see a super couple say that to each other. I guess we're at cross purposes. It's like she leaves because she doesn't want to be there for that scandal to erupt after she's been outed as his mistress. So oddly, she decides, I'm going to work. So she takes a case in the middle of being, you know, it would basically.
That's how Olivia deals with things, though. She runs away or she works is one of the two.
But it's like Marla Maples being outed on the ski slopes as Trump's mistress, and then she's like, you know, I really want to go do a beauty pageant right now. It's like Liv goes to work. So, and she gets with Jake as her role dog on this, and, you know, does this whole thing, and very innocent, but pictures are snapped with her and Jake. So Fitz, being the big titty-suck baby that he is, totally misinterprets things, and once again,
no, because Abby's bitch ass went to him and rubbed that shit in his face, and she knew how he was gonna react. She did that on purpose, and I'm so mad at Abby.
But he's a titty-suck baby. He's a baby. This is the president of the United States, and he reacts like a petulant child to everything.
He should be on Gerber baby food.
It's true. I love Cyrus pointing that out.
Y'all gonna stop doing it.
Cyrus is like, you have to give children what they want. I'm like, that is so true about this man. You know, he is. Oh. So then he invites Mel.
That boy did not have any good whoopings when he was a kid.
Well, that's his daddy raped his wife. I think that's the best whooping you could ever give somebody.
Well, he didn't know about that when he was.
I think he probably got some beatdowns too, if your dad is that sadistic. But he's.
I believe that too.
Yeah, he's a petulant child. And that would be great to explore. I mean, we do know his daddy was a hard ass. So. He reacts by bringing Melly back into the White House, which all of the usurpers that are around them are orchestrating, including Abby. Yes, Lord. Abby is like, look, I gotta stake my power up in here, too. She ho-checked Lizzie Bear. But
Abby, Elizabeth, and Melly were awesome last week.
She didn't even ho-check her like she should. All you want is equality. That's it. Yeah, that's all you want. You went and sold out your best friend. Pretty much said, forget you, I'm going to do me, everything. And all you want is equality. You don't want to make her your bitch. You don't want to say, hey, I'm top dog in here. Equality? Really, Abby? I need
Olivia's
you to aim higher.
Sold out. Olivia sold out Abby before.
No, she hasn't. Olivia, well, you know, they get mad at her when Olivia decides to. Olivia is the boss. And when she decides to fold up and take a year-long vacation and grow her hair out curly, that's her business. They get mad at her when she does that kind of stuff. And Liv really needs to tell, except for Huck, because Huck obviously does need her to watch him every second of the day. But when Abby was all mad about that, I'm like, girl, get on LinkedIn and find a new job if I do it again. Shut up.
Olivia basically pimped out Abby to the guy who ended up becoming... Oh, what's the role? I can't think of it all
of
a sudden.
No, she did not pimp that man out, because she's the one who saved her from that, because she knew...
I'm talking
history.
About
the one who the beat guy, her back in the day.
No, the guy that she, I mean, the how the relationship started between her and is it the
top attorney general?
Yeah.
Talking about Dave,
I mean, when that, that whole thing started because Olivia was wanting him to, her to get close to him.
Well, yeah, but she didn't tell her to fall down on his penis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I just feel like a lot of times with the gladiators, they tend to act like Olivia is their mama and they're grown-ass people and they need to calm down on that. But Liv flipped the script. I think at that last moment when she said that she was his mistress, that was her saying, no, I do want this man, and I'm ready to deal with the consequences. Mel, what did you think of that?
It's about time, Olivia. 5 seasons and finally there's some kind of progression. Finally, the switch has flipped. Finally, something has happened. So I was really happy to see her finally get to a point where she's like, okay, like you just said, okay, you know what? If I want to do this with this man, this is what it's going to have to be. And I love him. I do. And I feel like her turning point came during that voicemail. He called her and he said, you know what? I know you said wait for me to call, but I'm calling you now. I'm telling you, I get it. I understand. Abby helped me see the light that you are not ready to deal with this and you can't deal with this. And I don't want you to have to throw away your whole life for me because I love you too much for that. And I feel like that was Olivia's click, 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 ding, ding, ding. You know what? Forget it. I'm in it to win it with this man. Let's do this. About damn time, Olivia. But let's see if she means it. That's the thing. Is you can say, okay, I'm ready. But when the storm come and when everything gets really down and dirty, are you really ready for it? Can you really do it? That's what I want to know. She stole
an election for that petulant child. She's down for
okay,
it.
Okay, see, you and Fitz hate. Oh, you're going to get me started today. I'm not going to call that man a petulant child. I'm not going to do
it. I'm not the only one on this podcast who thinks that.
The thing about Fitz is, I love him so much. I love him. But he's naive. He really is. He really thinks he's got a one-track mind of, oh, well, if I do this and I believe in this, it's going to happen. We're going to do it. And it's like, no, Fitz, not so much. You didn't think about this, and that. But I'm not going to call him a petulant child.
He is a spoiled
You know who he is? He's that duke over in England that wanted to give up the throne for what's her face? What was their names?
Oh, Wallace, like
yeah. He really believes that it's yeah. He thinks that's so romantic and altruistic to do that. Like, and then they're gonna go make jam together. No, they're not gonna make jam together because every time she's out to try to pick the jam, some paparazzo is gonna fall out of a tree into the jam patch because their lives would they would never be able to hide from this ever, ever, ever. There's no this naivete that he has about this life for them. Mm-hmm. It's so silly. What did you think of the episode, Sarah?
Well, first of all, I think what I came away with is that Susan should be president of the United States in this fictional
universe.
She really
should. As silly as she is, she should.
She's the person who, the one person who had, like, when she said, hey, you're the president, you basically have to hold yourself to higher standards while you're in office. I was like, you're not an ordinary person. I was like, thank you. Thank you. Finally, someone who understands, you know, has some respect for the office and understands what being a leader is. Because for real, you can only be president for 8 years. It's not a lifetime thing. You can suck it up and deal. But, you know, I was so glad. I felt it was like finally the character growth we needed to see from Olivia, where she's just like, you know, we saw her. She's been so afraid of this coming out the whole time. She's done everything for it. And now she's just like, screw it. Like, I'm going to own it. And, you know, she pulled what I would say that was what she should have done. Like, I call it the Letterman move. You know how Letterman, when he was about, they were trying to blackmail, that guy was trying to blackmail him about having an affair. And so what he did was he went on his show and was like, guess what? I had an affair. And it went away and, like, people were like, well, he owned up to it. It went away in, like, 3 weeks, and the guy who tried to blackmail him ended up in prison. I was like, well, you know, that's how you handle it. That was some crisis management right there.
You own it.
I hope Queen Melly destroys them both.
Let me tell you something about Melly. Go ahead.
No, I'm just saying, watching it last week, it was like the preview for this next week's episode. I hope Melly and Cyrus destroy those two. It's going to be so much fun.
Well, Melly better watch out. She, you know, Olivia is not thinking about Melly. It's like, girl, I can have your man any way I want him, anytime I want him, any place I want him. He will leave this White House if Olivia Pope snaps her fingers. He would walk away from all of it today. Who Melly better watch, though, is Miss Ellen DeGeneres, because that's the oldest.
Elizabeth North.
Elizabeth is coming for her, because, you know, Melly was like the cat that swallowed the canary when she walked in there and basically announced that she was back on the throne, and Lizzie had to just swallow all of that bile. I'm more interested, because Melly versus Olivia was really interesting in season one, you know, to me. But it's not now. The moment I found out that, you know, she doesn't really have any romantic interest in Fitz anyway, it's like, well, there's really, I mean, the triangle still works for me. It's still very, they're the three most interesting characters on the show, and I really love it at its best when they play that. But she doesn't love Fitz that way. She loves Fitz as her partner, as her, you know, as her ticket to the top. And, you know, in a lot of ways, she's been his ticket to the top. But she's not, you know, I think she wishes that they could have had that kind of love. And
but it's too late.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's kind of like what might have been. But, you know, and she and Melanie, I mean, she and Lord, Melly and Olivia are frenemies, the way I see it. I mean, I don't really see, if they do a flash forward at the end of this show, I see the two of them as 60-year-old women sitting there at the funeral, you know, holding the flag together, comforting each other, because, you know.
Like when that Prime Minister of France, that totally happened, yeah.
You know, and speaking of France, that's the kind of story I wish they would explore with this show, because I have never understood why, well, yes, I do, because one party acts like morality is such a big thing, and both parties have to live up to it, even though both parties tend to have these sexual proclivities come out. I don't care who my elected officials screw. As long as they are not underage, I don't care. If they are consenting adults, I do not care, and I never have. You know, two of my favorite leaders in history, John F. Kennedy and Martin Luther King, were big hoe dogs. I do not care, because they changed the world in positive ways, in my opinion. Bill Clinton was a shameless cat hound. but he balanced the budget. He did so many wonderful things. Who cares? I would not care if any of them. Donald Trump has a string of former mistresses if he's going to be the president. I really wish that there would be a storyline on there about how America just needs to become more like France and stop acting like the president's marital status has any effect on his ability to lead the free world. But that's pie in the sky. But so let's go to Grays, which had Bailey doing a Bailey, which was she finally gets chief of surgery. And she...
You spoiled it for me.
Well, this is a podcast that talks about television.
From the person who told me not to spoil Scream Queen.
In my defense, Scream Queen is a murder mystery. This is a character-driven drama. It's not like spoiled, you know, who the murderer was. Anyway, so, yes. So Bailey royally has a bad, bad, very bad day as chief of surgery. Who watched, since Luke is behind?
I watched it.
Okay. I will have you know that I caught up all the last season, and I'm halfway through the first episode, so next week I will be caught up.
Well, I'm sorry. You that far behind, I can't make no promises. So, Sarah, what did you think of Bailey's crisis of conscience as she tries to force, you know, the Motley crew to do this impossible surgery or impossible series of surgeries, and then, you know, turns out to be, you know, Napoleon?
I mean, first of all, I tweeted this, was like, would she be having this questioning herself, and would the other staff members be also questioning her if she were a man? Because how many times did we see, you know, the chief, you know, rally everyone to do the impossible? Every episode of Grey's Anatomy is, there's a 1% chance this could work, and it's only been done once in Paris, and we have a thing on the internet, but we're going to try it, and it's going to work. That's every episode of the show. So this was her just doing the typical Grey's Anatomy thing. But then I liked it, because I'm like, that is real. Like, women are sort of socialized to have all these doubts and worry that they're not being nice enough. And I liked the part where the chief was like, well, I still call him the chief, because Richard was like, hey, you know, this sort of shows why you're the right person for this. This is your first day. You know, you came up with all these awesome ideas. You're trying to help this woman who was being really, frankly, kind of unreasonable about her life-saving surgery interfering with her work. And, you know, to me, that was like kind of like, that's the thing that like Grey's still does well, is sort of like addressing, sort of in a very, you know, exaggerated way, like what it is to be a woman in the workplace in a leadership role. So that I found interesting. I still like the fact that there's like yet another new crop of interns. I'm like, I cannot be bothered to learn your names, though. Like, I just don't need you.
I still don't know half the names of the ones who were like now dating Karev and teaching the little ducklings, and it's like, I don't even know your names,
yeah.
Much less the new group.
And by the way, I'm mad at, like, what, Dave Jackson was just being a jerk this week. Like, it is this thing where it's like, I get, you know, having things, you know, relationships falling apart after a baby dies, that's so real, and I get, like, you know, him being mad at April for this one thing, but, like, he was basically treating her like, you know, she had, like, tried to kill the family dog or something. I mean, like, he was just so mad at her beyond what sort of seemed reasonable.
See,
wait, Jackson, you said?
Yes.
I can't wait to hear what Jamie has to say about this.
This will be similar to Luke and my epic discussion on me believing that Christina had every right to abort that baby, and Luke being like, she should have just made the sacrifice to have the family with so-and-so. I am Team Jackson. I'm tired of April Kempner with her bullshit. He lost a baby too. Yes, they both lost the, you know, she's the woman and she was carrying the baby. But instead of staying there and fighting for her man and fighting for her marriage, she carried her happy ass off to that war zone and almost got MERS, although she didn't end up having it. And now she wants to just come back. I think what he's most angry about is that she thinks she can just come back and pick up right where they left off.
Take him for granted.
Well, in that case, yeah, I think he's fine to be like, no, it's not going to work out for us. It was just the tone he took. Like, it was like she had committed, like, you know, like she was like some crazy crackhead who would come out of prison.
But don't you think that that's what she's basically been?
Well,
in the last season, she put all of his feelings aside, didn't pay any attention to anything, and now she's expecting to just waltz back in.
And that's my problem with her. It's not like if this was, you know, if leaving after the miscarriage for 3 months was the first flighty, ridiculous thing she had done, I would say, come on, you know, Avery, cut her some slack. But this girl, you know, all of this, we can't have sex. I'm going to go marry, you know, Tad's son from all my children because they can't be with you. And no, now I'm going to bust up you and your little cute chocolate intern. No, I'm going to do this. She's a mess. And, you know, neurotic messes are always popular in primetime television. I mean, from Ally McBeal on upwards. But she just...
And he married that mess.
Yes.
He knew that.
He did, but, you know... That's what annulments are for, divorces are for.
And I'd be even fine with him getting divorced. It was just the particular way, like, he was basically like, I'm going to change the locks, bitch. Like, that just seemed a little bit...
See, and I think that her thing is, she doesn't want to fail. What I kept getting when she's like, we're going to fix this. I'm going to fight for you. I'm like, are we going to see that this is her religion coming back into play, that she just cannot abide by the thought of having a divorce on her? Or what? Because it's like, she has not tried to understand. And of course, yes, she's the one.
It's always been about her.
She's self-absorbed.
She lost the baby, but she didn't grieve with him. She just left. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, I love them as a couple, but I wouldn't be, and it would be very soapy for them to bust them up and put them with two different people and then them have to build their way back together. I think he could mix well with Meredith's sister, or even back with, you know, the little intern girl he was with the year before.
And this is going to sound out of left field, but I almost feel like, too, they've been putting some weird, like, April Arizona vibes out there.
They do. But, ooh, if she had issues.
Oh, the neurosis.
If her Bible-based issues made her have problems about having sex with a man before marriage, look, she won't never be able to. Look, the book of Leviticus will have her having too many problems with Arizona.
But it was just, like, I think it was just sort of the tone it was taken. And that said, Grey's always has these people who are in relationships. Meredith Derek did it all the time. Every, you know, married couple. People are just assholes to the people that they supposedly love across the board on this show. And I'm just like, why? Like, one couple doing that, but like consistently, it's just one of those things where it's like, well, if you guys all treat each other like that, maybe none of you should ever be in a relationship.
Well, you know, doctors are such alphas, so and I wonder if it's not like, you know, in real life. I mean, I've always wondered how Grace lines up with that, because I don't know a lot of doctors who, now, well, let me say that my growing up, my pediatrician was married to my mom's gynecologist. The doctor who delivered me, his wife was my pediatrician. So whenever I'd go in for checkups, he would say, oh, I deliver you. They were Indian. I deliver you as baby. You a lot bigger than were when baby. And I'd be like, I don't think that's funny. And then his wife would tell my grandmother to put me on Slim Fast. But anyway, so I know that they were. But I wonder in real life, you know, how many surgeons actually marry other surgeons. Because... That would seem like a recipe for a lot of divorces because, you know, surgeons, you kind of have to have a God complex to, you know, take somebody's heart out of their chest. So two God complexes in one bed could be a lot of deity. I want to talk about comedy. So this wasn't in the outline, but some of our readers have been asking what comedies we're watching. So going around, Luke, what comedy, what are the comedies, very briefly, that you're engaged in this season, both new and returning?
Blackish, Modern Family, and The Muppets.
All right.
And Life in Pieces, but I haven't watched the latest episode of that.
Okay.
And Big Bang.
Mel, what about you?
I started Blackish. I'm binging it because I haven't watched all of it, but that's probably my only one. I'm not big on comedies. I don't know. I'm weird.
Okay.
But it's good so far. I like it.
Sarah?
Blackish. And I have to say the thing that I watched this week that was new that made me laugh really hard was the pilot of The Grindr. Which,
okay.
That's a show, basically the premise is Rob Lowe and Fred Savage are brothers. Fred Savage is a lawyer, like they're in this small town, I forget where I want to say, it may have been North Dakota, I don't know, I may have to look this up, but I'm in this small town.
Oh Lord, if Luke sees a mountain on the sky, he tunes in.
I'll have to see what, I'll figure that out, I'll search this while we're doing this, but he and his, Rob Lowe, is an actor who has played a lawyer on like a TV drama where like he's like his character is always like saving the day, and the show is called The Grindr. The show ends, he comes home to visit his brother, and he ends up like deciding that being a TV lawyer qualifies him to be a real lawyer, and he ends up like, you know, speaking up for this case, and it's like this small time case about like, you know, an eviction or something in court. And he's just so, like, narcissistic, but, like, yet, like, endearing in the role. And, like, he does have, they did a good job of, like, Fred Savage's character is, like, really smart, but he's, like, a terrible, like, public speaker in court. And, you know, it's just this big thing, and he ends up winning it. That said, the pilot was so funny because it was all setting it up. I don't know where the show goes from here because it's almost one of those, it might have worked better as a movie type deals. But, that I found to be very funny.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that because in the next podcast, I want us to go in depth on the trend or overkill of all of these movie to TV pilots. We will talk about that next week because Lethal Weapon, everything,
MacGyver,
you know, Bird on a Wire is about to be enough. Just kidding.
But Jamie, well, I guess it wasn't a movie. I was gonna say, didn't you want to have Allison Sweetie and James Scott, but that wasn't a movie.
No, that was not.
I mean, that was a TV show.
There was MacGyver. MacGyver was not a movie.
They're doing too many
television show. But Miley was on SNL. I have not watched that. I want to see that. Comedy wise, for me, I am really behind. But I've become a bit of a snob with comedy. I will say, you know, my comedy go tos tend to be on HBO or Showtime. Or at this point, you know, I watched Chelsea Handler's Netflix special based on her book "You Gotta Be Kidding Me." The other night. It's kind of hard for a network sitcom to make me laugh anymore. The Muppets is great. But I did have a side note because, you know, all roads lead back to soaps with me. When that awful Life in Pieces is inevitably canceled, CBS needs to just go ahead and keep James Brolin in a holding deal because CBS, I looked this up the other day. And guess what CBS owns the rights to, Sarah Babel?
What?
Hotel. Oh, I need them to reboot Hotel with James Brolin and Connie Selica. You know they need to reboot Hotel. I can't look at him playing this goofy Dan from Night Court type daddy on that show anymore. Peter McDermott, the dashing man who ran the St. Gregory Hotel, would not be doing this bullshit. Connie Selica, what is she doing? Where's she at? Connie Selica, where are you? I want to know the next chapter of what happened to Peter McDermott. and Christine Francis. And I bet you they have a son named Frank, for the Francis part of her name. Frank McDermott now runs the St. Gregory. Colin Egglesfield can play him. He's the new dashing CEO of the St. Gregory Hotel. And then you bring on a whole new generation of hotel employees and guests. Now, what made this pop into my mind is I was watching Hotel on YouTube. Yes, I need a life. And it was an episode where Deirdre Hall, you know, because Hotel had a ton of big name people playing guest stars, just like Fantasy Island and The Love Boat. You know, Aaron Spelling loved doing those type of, you know, shows where he could bring in big names as guests. And so Deirdre Hall was married to the dad on the Brady Bunch, and she was surprising him. And so she had the bellboy let her into the room as a surprise because she wanted to sneak up on her husband. So the man comes out of the bathroom and she's all under the covers trying to get 80s era sexy, which, you know, that means your hair is super big and you done kicked off your pumps. And so he comes out of the bathroom with his towel and she's like, surprise. Yeah, I know how Deirdre did it back in the day, but still does it. Surprise. And then another man walked out of the bathroom with her husband. And I'm like, damn, Hotel was on in 1983. Aaron Spelling was very progressive for his day. So I need Arthur Hayley's Hotel to return. James Brolin, you know you need to be in Hotel. Life in Pieces is not going to make it. It's terrible. And don't nobody want to look at that. So that is my bedtime story for the night. And remember, everyone, to say your prayers and to eat your folic acid in your cereal because it's fortified for your health.
Night, John Boy.
On this, I will say, everybody keep it popping.
So long.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.